Jai Ma. So there is a question which, of course, it's quite often asked. And that question is why we should have gratitude towards Sri Aurobindo and the mother. Not that there is not sufficient reason, in the sense that they have done what they have done is something, if I have to say, words will fall short. Because if we see into the whole history of avatars, saints, sages, seers, spiritual beings, nobody has done, tried, attempted, put in effort for such a goal which is going to redeem mankind as a whole. But the question comes from a different consciousness. We accept that in the whole spiritual history there is none who has even conceived of the possibility of terrestrial transformation. And then to give one's life to it, to engage in an unprecedented tapasya, is obviously phenomenal. But the question comes from this, that but he is the divine. So who else but the divine can do it? Well, I am reminded of a little question which I, when I had gone to Nathdwara temple, and not Nathdwara, there is another one in Mathura, I am forgetting anyways. So it was a famous Krishna temple, and in that temple a lot of priests had come, and the head priest, he had also come, and he said, I have a question. And the question was, why does God want us to do bhakti for him? It's another way of putting it. After all, God is God is everything, so why we should do bhakti for him? It was asked from that standpoint. And a typical Vedanti will also ask this question, but from another point of view, that, well, all is God. So if all is God, what is there that there should be somebody who should seek and somebody who should, do bhakti and seva, etc. Astavakra Gita, if you see, it concludes. None, what Sri Aurobindo has also written in one of the places in Moksha, the highest word of wisdom is, none is bound, none is free, none seeking to be free. So if you take that standpoint, then the question comes. So is the question invalid, or these movements invalid? No, they are still valid. So I can first start with that answer, which to the priest I had spontaneously given. I said, it makes no difference to the divine whether we love him or we don't love him. But it makes a difference to us. So all these methods, for instance, worship. Worship of the divine. People also ask this question. Because divine is in you. You are also divine. Sri Ramakrishna used to have this experience. He would see Kali sitting on flowers, and he would suddenly pick up the flowers and even put on himself, because he'll see Kali in himself. So all this is true, that, well, divine is in everything, all is in the divine, and the divine is all. So who is the bhakta and who is the seeker? That's where we have to understand the mystery of the lila or the manifestation. So manifestation implies a limitation. In Upanishad, this is called as birth. So whenever Upanishad uses the word, or the Gita uses the word birth, so birth doesn't mean physical birth. Physical birth is only one form of birth. But what it implies is the infinite has limited himself or itself or that self or the one self into finite. That's why the play is there. All manifestation is a limitation. At least the manifestation in this lower triple world. And we are not going into its purpose, etc. Now this manifestation is to reach a point where the finite and the infinite, they are together. So infinite consciousness using the finite to manifest. This is the ultimate acme of the lila. And as it tries to express itself, it changes the finite. Because it's the infinite which is rushing into, using the channel. This is the basic principle. Now this is going to happen, whether we like it or not, because this is the secret truth of things. And it is because of this that in ignorance we want to expand. Now this expansion takes various forms. In ignorance it takes the form of desire. More and more and more and more and more, endlessly more. Why? Because finite beings can never be satisfied with finite. They seek the infinite. That's why there is death. Because the finite soul wants to take the experience of the infinite on a finite basis. That's why we, you know, at a lower level we have ambition. That's why we want to join and unite. We have ideals of unity. All these things in ignorance are movement, because always the finite has the secret sense of infinite. But these are movements in ignorance. They expand, they help in their own way. They expand the finite, the boundaries of the finite. But there comes a time when this unconscious drive toward the infinite must change into conscious. So why conscious? After all, infinite is driving through these means. He has become desire. If you take the highest standpoint, he has become desire. He has become all these things that we experience. So he becomes the aspiration. He becomes the seeking. He becomes the bhakti. So why does he become all this? Because to make it easier. He is not wanting us to do bhakti out of, oh, you better do bhakti worship. He doesn't want. It won't make a difference to him. But these processes have evolved from within man as a result of his seeking for the infinite. And who has evolved the process? The infinite himself has sort of pushed people. It's like a good teacher. He does not spoon feed the student. He shows the way, like, okay, try this, okay, do this, maybe you can try this way. And that's how the seeker learns. One is that he will leave it to himself to learn. In which case, there is a danger. The seeker may, you know, if you are learning swimming, there is no teacher, you may drown. But another is where the teacher is teaching, okay, try this, oh, no, no, don't worry, he takes you out of fear and he is around holding you, but making you do the effort. So there is a phase when mankind has to make conscious effort as part of the evolution to make it easier, to facilitate it. And in that effort, love, devotion, worship, gratitude, aspiration, all these have an important role. Surrender also. After all, we can ask the question, typical Vedantin living in his thoughts, not in the truth of experience, can raise this question, who is worshipping? Like, you know, we had one bhajan in, as children we used to hear, Arya Samaji bhajan, that he has neither forehead, neither, vakshasthal, chest. So where do I put the chandan? Where do I put the... It was a, kind of criticism of the those who do bhakti of idols. But again, we have the same question, why do bhakti of idols? There is... God is inside you. Why should you go to a temple? Why should you do this? And all these are valid in their own domain. But man is in ignorance. Thought may conceive it. But thought is only conceived. It remains powerless unless I realize what the thought is conceived. So now thought is conceived that God is in all. And let's start with God is in me. How do I find him? So for that, meditation, concentration, aspiration, those who want to go that way. Or bhakti is one of the swiftest path, and gratitude is one form of bhakti. In fact, mother says it is love with a little you. It is the same quality of vibration as love, but with a certain special you to it. So when we have gratitude, it makes a difference to us. It's not that divine is pleased. It's like the same old formula that if can I win over divine by offering money or offering special prayers. Well, the catch of this question is if divine can be won over by your prayer, then, he may do injustice. Imagine if I have to, appear for an exam in which 1 lakh people are appearing for an exam. And what happens? 99,000 are very deserving. They put an effort and everything. I have done no effort. And I pray to the divine. So will I succeed? Won't I succeed? Because I am just putting this question in so many ways, because this question touches upon many aspects. Well, what happens when I pray? Now, when I pray, I have put my consciousness in contact with the divine. What happens next when I put my consciousness in contact with the divine vis-a-vis somebody who has not put his consciousness in contact with the divine consciously? So we have two candidates for the same job. There is only one vacancy. Now, we all know that it is not always that somebody who has prayed gets selected. If we see the facts of life, he may get selected, he may not get selected. Now that's what Gita describes as the fruits, why we destiny presents to us something which we may or may not like. Often people ask me, I have prayed, I have this thing, but I have not got this job. And I know people who have gone through desperate situations, really desperate. So I know that other side of the story, not in maybe a life of some of us, but in some other people who have prayed and genuinely prayed. I mean, but somehow last minute things slip. But then what is happening? By putting our consciousness in contact with the divine, we experience a support in our journey. After all, the inner journey is the most important part. So we have a beautiful couplet from Kabir. He says, Guru Kumhar Shish Kumbh Hai. So Guru is like the potter and the disciple is like the pot. And what does he do? A potter, when he has to shape the pot, hits from outside. He has to shape it, no? So he has to give touches, strokes, some gentle, some hard. But he has to put a hand inside because otherwise he'll break. So he gives the strokes from outside, but he also supports from inside. So sometimes we get blows also in life despite being turned. So it's a larger and all-encompassing. Yet we must pray. Because when we pray, we open, make a more conscious contact with the divine consciousness. And therefore the journey becomes smoother, easier, and he turns even the most impossible situations where we have outwardly lost even everything. I'm taking an extreme example, not that it happens, but it did happen in the case of Pandavas. Or Draupadi. Even if we lose everything, still, because we have opened the door to the divine, we leap the inner stages of evolution. And that's why all these means of forming a contact. So when we put prasad, it was very, I mean, in Indian culture, it is there, in others have also, you know, started doing it, that you come there, you give a certain offering, and you know, God will fulfill your wishes. Well, he may or may not, I'm not saying, it's a very complex phenomenon. I'm not entering into when there is a wish fulfillment, when there is not wish fulfillment, why. That's a different subject altogether, and we'll take it up someday. Why it happens, why it doesn't happen, how does our efforts bear fruits? It's described in the Gita very well. But having said that, still, supposing I know that I am not going to get what I am praying to God by kind of foreknowledge. I know I am not going to get. Should I pray or should I not pray? So I'll raise this in another way, this question. There are people who say, I have been honest all my life, but see what has happened with me. I have been deceived. I trusted God, trusted people, but they cheated me. Now, Shobindo raises this question. If we are practicing honesty and trust because of some material rewards, then actually it is not helping us. It's not going to help us. Honesty is its own reward because it strengthens the moral fabric. When you trust people, you grow. You grow wide. You are generous. But when you don't trust people, then your consciousness becomes narrow and small. So all these methods are basically means through which our consciousness comes in contact with the infinite divine consciousness, which is the goal of creation. So if we don't have gratitude, it will still, you know, he will do what he has to do. After all, see, the evolution is going on all over the world. There are people who experience that they have the feeling, because they are centered in the heart, that there is, you know, one should feel grateful to the divine. There are others who feel otherwise, but yet those who feel this gratitude open more and their inner evolution takes leaps and bounds. So that part is the concrete part. This question is very interesting. I remember in school somebody had asked me and it shocked me, but he had asked in a very different way. One of my friends, he asked me, friend means batchmates, MBBS during that time. I still remember taking a walk in and I was saying, you see, our parents have done, you know, so much and then we are here. So it's so nice. So he made a counter. He said, well, parents are supposed to do, everybody's parents do. And I was surprised. I had never thought it like that. I said, logically, he's right. After all, parents are supposed to do it. But something in my heart was jarring. Intellectually, he is right. Every parent does. Parents don't do because they are doing something special. It's the nature of parents to do it. So it jarred my heart and it shook my mind. It shook my mind because I took it as natural because we grew up in a certain culture towards parents, you feel grateful. But he's right that, well, every parent has to do it, and they do it, and what's the big deal about it? But then I realized, it took me a while. It's like, you know, stunned into silence. And then it took me a while. I said, yes, that's right. And they will continue to doing. But what is, should be my response. So then from there, it whole life, it's like, I feel we should practice this, all of us. I mean, just my feeling. That what others do towards us, which includes the divine, is the divine's dharma, others' dharma, their karma. If he is withholding from me a happiness I desire or covet, he knows. If others are being mean to me, selfish towards me, it's their problem. My focus should be my dharma and my karma. That's the end of the story. And it is a wonderful doctrine. I can just share it in a very personal note. It's a wonderful thing. Makes life so easy and simple. Not complicated at all. What others are doing, why they are doing. See, so and so did this to me. It's irrelevant. I don't even say their karma will bring their result. No, then there is an ill will. I'm almost saying, see, no. It's their problem. Maybe I needed, and I go on to say that maybe I needed this experience so somebody behaved with me the way they behaved because it was an experience I needed. Maybe I needed to experience that, well, human love, human relation is all transitory. I needed to experience it. So it's not that the person is wrong or good or bad. But having learnt my lesson, I should not lose my dharma. Okay, from now on, I will not be loving towards others. On the contrary, I should be loving towards others. But I should know that, have expectations only from the divine. Then it makes life very easy. That for everything that I need, divine, but give to others. I should continue trusting people, even if they deceive you. It's okay. So, but don't be, sometimes even being deliberately fooled. We know stories of mother. Mother once, I think it was Champaklalji, he told mother, mother, do you know what they do to the eggs from the ashram? So, mother smiled. He said, they are giving it to others, selling it on the, you know, these eggs had stamp of the ashram. I don't know now what is the process. I've never seen. I have always wondered what is a stamped egg look like. Eh? Okay, so anyway, so it used to be sold. Mother smiled and laughed. She said, yes, yes, I know everything. Even somebody would say, you know, so and so is telling you lies. Mother says, I know he is telling lies. So divine doesn't change his attitude towards us based on whether we do bhakti or not. He is moved by not a brief life's will to act, as Savitri says, or not by looking at surface appearances or phenomena. He does what he has to do based on the deeper divine will. And you can't please him into obedience. That we should know. But when we obey him, when we surrender to his will, regardless of what happens in our life, we grow in peace, joy, love, beauty, beatitude, ananda. Why? Because that is the nature of the divine. So we grow in contact with the divine. When we have gratitude towards the divine, we grow in contact with the divine. Who otherwise, if we don't have the gratitude, then divine will continue to do what he has to do, but we'll miss out on the joy. Maybe we'll not understand why he is doing what he is doing. But if we come in contact with the divine, we'll also understand what is the will behind all this. And that itself is a great clearance inside. So imagine if we are meeting difficult experiences of life. Just one example with which we'll close. So the usual response is, oh my God, I have trusted the divine, I have loved him, I have done bhakti and I have done blah, blah, blah. And you know, in my life I'm having these painful experiences. This one response. The other is gratitude. I am grateful for all these experiences. I don't know why, I'm just grateful. Then what happens? This gratitude opens a door. So we come in contact with the divine. Now what happens? We discover a profound truth. Because we are released from the ego and we discover the truth that Sri Aurobindo says so beautifully in so many words. He says that the seeker of the divine, is the exact word I am forgetting, but those who walk the path, he even is happy when he meets with suffering because he knows that the ego must be crucified for the divine self to be released. So when he gets a blow from the world, from people, he says, thank you, as Sri Aurobindo says, I couldn't break these bonds. You have broken for me. Of course, when I say break the bonds, the inner bonds, it's not about outwardly. So all these methods, including gratitude, the only why for them is, it helps my consciousness to come in contact with the divine. And when we use the word my consciousness, it's he who has limited himself. So let's put it impersonally, the finite consciousness. It's like a little house given to us. And that finite consciousness has to come in contact with the infinite. When we have gratitude, devotion, which is another aspect of gratitude, love, all these are shades. And then this consciousness opens beautifully toward the divine from within. And we are supported. We begin to become aware of why things are the way they are. And we automatically begin to change into the nature of the divine, sadharma gati. So we constantly live in the sense of companionship with the divine. Again, the same thing. Divine is everywhere in everything. But we don't experience him. But through these methods, we begin to experience. He is everywhere anyways. So imagine when we concretely experience. Intellectually, he is everywhere. He is here right at this point of time. But when we open the door and experience, oh, he is here. Life changes and we begin to experience what the divine nature is, grow in peace, joy, equality, impersonality, wideness, light, sweetness, beatitude, ananda. Okay, Jai Ma.